Okay, here we're already at the stage of the Haggadah, after most of the preamble in which we discussed the last few weeks that we had been setting the stage for the Haggadah. Now we're actually starting the story. And as we said last week, we are told to start the story all the way from a little bit before the beginning. And that is originally, our forefathers, we come from families of idolaters. The Achshav Kervanu Amakon La'Avodasa, and Hashem brought us to His service. Shenema, as it says in the pasuk, Yeshua El Kol Ha'am. Yeshua told the people. This is what Hashem Elokei Yisrael said. Your forefathers sat on the other side of the river, meaning the other side of the Yarden, Mesopotamia, Chutz Laretz, Terach Avri Avram Vavi Nochor, Terach. That's where our illustrious ancestry begins. By Abdul Elohim Acherim, they worshipped strange gods. We'll get there. Ve'ekach es Avram Avichem, and then I took Avram, I extricated him from that whole mess, and I brought him close to my service. So, why is it so important? This is actually, as we mentioned last week, this is a fulfillment of one of the chiyuvim of the Leil HaSeder. One of the parameters of telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim is, right, we know that the Haggadah is set up for us, but essentially, you can do it your own way. You just have to follow certain guidelines. Now, one of the fundamental guidelines is Maschil Bignus U'Mesayim B'Shvach. You must start with the lousy beginning of our history, and then work your way up to the glorious end of the story. So, a very, very important part of everything that we're doing tonight is, first of all, that feeling of gratitude to Hashem in the very fact that He chose us. And in saying that, we have to stress to ourselves the full extent of it. Meaning, there's a very famous concept in Jewish philosophy. Well, it just makes any sense, any logical discussion. Yediyas hafochim. In order to really appreciate one thing, you have to be able to appreciate the other side of it. Right? That's why, for example, you want your kid to appreciate treats more, don't give it to them all the time. Right? You get it all the time. That's a regular part of life, and they can fetch along with the treats. And the kid appreciates not having treats, he enjoys the treat all that much more. It's like that with everything. You want to really be able to appreciate what dark means, you have to see it against the light background. Etc., etc., etc. Right? So therefore, also, in order to really properly appreciate quite our status, we have to begin with the fact that we started out just the same nobodies as everybody else. Now, here is a little bit of avodah involved, because in order to do this, we have to really reach a realization that, boy, are we lucky. And you tell a person, you know, understand that our forefathers were idolaters, we could have been the same. Not everybody will feel relief. People might say, all right, what would have been so bad? Okay, Lamaisa, we were chosen as Jews and we have to keep the Torah. But would it have been a terrible thing otherwise? So, obviously, welcome. Part of the purpose here is that we have to realize that this is something to be very appreciative of. So we have to realize the following. And this is something we've stressed many times. And we're going to stress it again. The world was created for the purpose of Hashem giving the most He could possibly give to someone. Who that someone was going to be was originally not determined. The world was created, a material world, with material people, and there was an empty slot. The purpose of the world was not yet fulfilled. That's why, right away at the beginning of Bereishis, the pasuk says, "Ruach Elokim erachefes al pnei ha-moyim." Right? Hashem created the heavens and the earth. The earth was just waste and emptiness. It was darkness over the depths. The spirit of Hashem was hovering over the waters. What's the significance of that puzzle? It's just like an ambiguous puzzle. What's the significance of it? When did it stop hovering? What was it waiting for? What was it doing there? And the answer is that it was hovering for a long time. It was waiting for someone to land on. It was waiting for a landing pad. That's what the Shekhinah was doing. In other words, there's a huge world out there, worlds out there, of eternity, of Olam Haba, of utopia, of real bliss. Olam Hazeh is a small existence of darkness, just that there's a plug. That's the Ruach Elokim. The plug to become access to connect to all those upper worlds, to eternity. To Hashem, in other words. To Hashem. And at that plug, no one was plugged in. Nothing was plugged in. Nobody had actually made that connection. And the world was basically just kind of on hold. It was moving along. It was kind of on hold, waiting for that person to actually come and plug himself in to that eternal destiny. To Hashem. Plug himself into Hashem. And thereby connect to everything that Hashem is really about. Now, most of the world just went on blind to it. There was a world within that tiny little... They sufficed with the very limited pleasures that that world had to offer. And there were mishpachos ha'adamah. People born out of the earth, who died and sank back into the earth, and it ended with death. And the question is, when was there going to be somebody to come along and plug into that much, much, much greater purpose? To plug into that existence that we've often defined as where man is really just the shoe of the real man. You can turn yourself into that eternal being that's greater than all the malachim. The question is, who was going to get that role? And what we're stressing here is that it's not just about going out of Mitzrayim. This is what it's about. It's that we were the ones who came and managed to grab that historic role. It was really the destiny of the entire world. And this is what we're stressing. This is what we're noting when we're talking about now. We have to note something further. We have to note that it's also more than that. So first of all, yes, as soon as Hashem saw Avraham Avinu making the efforts, we have to note how Hashem then came and plucked Avraham Avinu out of everything around him and simply set him on the road to eternal success. He plugged Avraham Avinu into, we'll talk just in terms that we can relate to a little more. He plugged Avraham Avinu into from what was originally just, well, in those days, a 200-year existence into billions of years of purpose. And we're the continuation of all that. So therefore, tells us first of all that he took Avraham Avinu out and began guiding him. Once he saw Avraham Avinu doing his utmost to connect Hashem, Hashem actually did for Avraham Avinu what was way beyond Avraham Avinu could possibly imagine. Avraham Avinu at the time, in the first 70 years of his life, didn't quite realize what he was plugging into. Didn't quite realize what he was getting. This was a person who used his mind. He thought, he realized that there must be a higher purpose to the world. He realized that he must be a god. And since he was a conscientious person, and an honest person, and a person who wasn't able to just continue living his own life, his old life, if he's discovering new rights and wrongs, he did his utmost to live right, and he didn't realize that what he was actually doing was connecting to eternity, plugging into eternity, plugging into Hashem, becoming a completely different being. And Hashem helped him out. Hashem at one point, after years of intense labor, Hashem actually made contact with him. He got his first nevuah, which was already a revelation into completely new worlds. It was a connection to completely new worlds. Nevuah, we mentioned in one of the recent shiurim, Nevuah was actually like stepping into Olam Haba. All of a sudden he saw that everything he had been working towards his whole life was really so much deeper and more profound and more infinite than he had possibly imagined. And yes, Hashem ordered him to leave or caused him, because Hashem was now going to guide him to go even further and further on his path and do even better. And the truth is that it was even before that. Before that already, Hashem was busy manipulating, setting the stage for the appearance of Avraham Avinu. Really, Avraham Avinu came and culminated the creation of the world. The creation of the world didn't end in the 6 days. What happened in the 6 days was Hashem set a stage. That's all. The first 6 days of creation was Hashem setting a stage. Hashem was setting the stage for the purpose of creation to actually happen. But that's all it was. The world wasn't functioning yet. The world was still raw material. It was potential. Avraham Avinu came and plugged in. And the world actually reached its culmination. Creation of the world was completed when Hashem took the Jewish people, designating them as the Am Hashem, which was really what the entire world was directed at.
When is this moment? You mentioned Abraham, the Rabbi mentioned Abraham before.
Right.
Is it Yitzhak, or which event with Abraham? Kishan?
No, it was the creation of the Am Hashem, of the nation of Hashem, which was all the Jewish people. And now, so you're wondering, wait a minute, how do we jump from Avraham Avinu to the Am Hashem? And that's our next stage. So here, let's get to that connection. Again, the purpose of Hashem's creation was not an Avraham, a one-time person. The purpose of Hashem's creation was a nation or a people. Theoretically, one person if he will live forever. But a people that represents Hashem in this world all the way throughout history. So that's why we wouldn't be completely correct in saying that as soon as Avraham Avinu showed up, that's it. The purpose of the world was now realized. Unless he would have a good Talmud after him, And we can know that that's guaranteed. But now let's go back to Avraham Avinu. Talk about his life story a little bit more, because that's actually what the Agada is doing for us. Avraham Avinu, as we said, was intensely dedicated to Hashem. Right? To the extent that at one point Hashem says, Al tira Avram, Schorcha harbe me'od. Hashem tells Avraham Avinu, you have great reward coming to you. And here we come to an exchange between Avraham Avinu and Hashem, which is mamish, critical. The turning point in history. This exchange between Avraham and Hashem. What does Avraham answer Hashem? And Hashem tells him, you have great reward coming to you. Anybody who hears that and knows who Hashem is and knows what Olam Haba is should be jumping for joy. What does Avraham Avinu say? Hashem Elokim, ma titen li? Hashem, what can you possibly give me? V'anochi ha'olech hariri. I go childless. So in other words, Avraham Avinu is saying, Hashem, what could possibly be worth anything as long as I have no children? What do you mean what could possibly be worth anything as long as I have no children? Hashem is promising the epitome of Olam Haba. Olam Haba is better than children, isn't it? What does that mean, ma titen li? Well, the answer is that Avraham Avinu was saying as follows. This is where it all begins. Avraham Avinu said to Hashem, I dedicated, you have to appreciate the intensity of what Avraham Avinu did. I dedicated my life to reach levels that were completely unprecedented in history. Completely unprecedented in history. Avraham Avinu justified the creation of mankind up until his time. All the billions of people, I don't know how many people lived until Avraham Avinu's time. Millions, I don't know if it was billions, probably millions it was. All the millions of people who lived until his time, all of their existence was justified when Avraham Avinu appeared on the scene. It's mind-boggling when you think about it. Shem says, it was worth it for me to keep all those millions of people going in order to lead up to an Avraham Avinu. And also more than that, we know that there were great people before Avraham Avinu in history. a shame. There was Avram. When Avram Avinu appears on the scene, they lose all their focus in the Torah. From now on, shame shows up in the Torah only in the context of his interaction with Avram Avinu. Why is that? The answer is because when the sun comes up, you can have very bright stars. You stop seeing them. They fade against the brightness of the sun. That was Avram Avinu, relative to Shane, Aver, the other great people. That was Avram Avinu. So we're talking about something unimaginable, something that defies imagination. Now, Avram Avinu is telling Hashem, after everything I did, after everything I accomplished, as far as making this world connect with you, up till then, Hashem was there, the world was there. Avram Avinu made the connection between the world and Hashem. He brought Hashem into the world. He spread Hashem's name in the world. Avraham Avinu mamish fulfilled the purpose of the whole creation. He partnered with Hashem in the creation of the world. That's what actually happened. Because when a person writes a book, a person authors a book, it's out on the shelves. So it's a very, very good feeling. But has his purpose been fulfilled yet? It's before anybody bought it. He went through the whole process, wrote it, the whole editing and the printing process, it sat on the shelves. Its purpose isn't fulfilled as long as nobody read it. As soon as somebody reads it, oh, now he justified all the effort. This is what Avraham Avinu did with Hashem. And Avraham Avinu is saying, so all that is going to die with me? That's not what I want. I'll get Olam Haba. But that's not what I did all this work for. All this effort should culminate in something that's going to be perpetuated. Something that's going to continue. Something that will be eternal. Davar shel kayama, something substantial. Not something. All my efforts, 200 years don't justify my efforts. That it all ceases after 200 years and then that's it. Not at 200 years, 175 years. I've probably lived for 175 years. That it all ceases at my death? My efforts were overkill. Right? If it ends after 175 years. My efforts should be something eternal. That's what I want from you. I'll go to Olam Haba. I'll get reward, but that's it. My career came to an end. All my accomplishments are finished. Until maybe in another 2,000 years, maybe there will be another one. Someone else will. And therefore he said, I want seed. This is why the Rambam says, this is why the Avos were so longing, right? Obviously, the Avos, we see that the whole time their focus was they wanted children. Why? Because this was their foremost ambition. What's that? Oh, it's a good question. Didn't Avraham Avinu have thousands of talmidim? Why was he worried about his heritage, but his legacy being perpetuated? But the answer to that question is, where are they today?
Yeah, how would
it didn't carry over.
How would he know that that his descendants would have a greater chance of carrying it on than his Tamim?
The truth is that this whole exchange between Avraham Avinu and Hashem actually came after an incident that showed Avraham Avinu, as long as it's not children, it's not going to work. Who is Avraham Avinu's prime Talmud? Light. Eliezer, you know what? You're right. I don't know if we'll give Light the title of prime. But he was one of his prime Talmud. Rav Hirsch says that this exchange came after Avraham Avinu's experience of Light. This was the person he had put all of his koichas into. The person who did carry his lessons. See that he went to Stein. And he took in guests from Sirus Nefesh, but at the end of the day, Light was not going to carry the legacy. Light did not prove to be up to Avraham Avinu's standards. Light was not a Yitzchak. Avraham Avinu was envisioning a Yitzchak. He hoped that he would get that in Light. And he was let down. And therefore, he says afterwards, who do I have? Eliezer. After Light, I don't know what I don't want to put my eggs in that basket. If it's not my own, if it's not my seed, it's not going to last. And it didn't. And apparently Avraham Avinu was wise enough to be able to foresee them, especially based on the experience with Lot.
I'm sorry if this is going off topic, but Lot was his relative, and Lot didn't do well. Eliezer was not his relative. Why was it so important to have Yitzchak married off to a relative and not to Eliezer?
You know, I want to leave that for afterwards. Okay. We'll leave that for afterwards. But that's a good question that deserves a good answer. Now, or if we'll put it into other words, everything we've just explained, Avraham Avinu, if we'll use Rav Shimshon Pinkus' terms, was telling Hashem as follows, which is really the same thing, just in other words. He's telling Hashem, I don't want all of my efforts to be in the framework of a business deal. That, you work, you'll get paid. Come to Olam Haba, get schar. I want to become bound up with you in an eternal way, which means my family becomes your family. That really is the essential definition of what a Jew is. The essential definition of a Jew is family of Hashem. It's not family because Hashem is not biological. But practically speaking, it's a bond of family. That's our, and even though Hashem is not biological, our bond with Hashem is more inherent than our biological bond with our family. That's the definition of a Jew, and that is actually what Avraham Avinu was asking for. Our status today is the Hashem's granting Avraham Avinu's request. That was what that request of Avraham Avinu represented. That was what he was asking of Hashem. And here, Hashem responded to him and told him, Lo Yirosh Chozeh. Meaning, basically, what Hashem answered Avraham Avinu was, okay, I will grant you the family that's going to become the Am Hashem, the family of Hashem. In other words, our status today was earned by Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu earned for us our superlative status. And here, there was actually something of a commitment on Hashem's part. Because here, Hashem was actually undertaking to breed the Am Hashem. Let's understand that this wasn't a simple thing. Naturally, it's true that even if Avraham Avinu would have children, there's a small chance, and the truth is we see that it wasn't, that all of them would continue in his way. Or even one day, you'd actually develop into a nation. It's not like that. People go off and do their own things. Why should people, especially in those times, you look at what was going on in biblical times, families very quickly evolved. As soon as they branched out, they broke off into all kinds of separate nations. Even if Avraham Avinu would have seed, that's what should happen there too. That's what did happen to an extent in his family. And Ishmael and Esav, those are the big pictures. Let's remember, our old friends Midian. They're also Avraham Avinu's seed. They branched off into a lot of different nations. But Hashem told him, Hashem granted his request. And Hashem said, Yodaya Teda, I am going to undertake the project of actually breeding in Am Hashem. At this point, it's not going to be the way you had to do it. That someone will have to come along, begin figuring things out from scratch, and make all the revelations that you made, and connect Hashem through his own efforts. No, Hashem says, you earned it. You earned it, and I am undertaking to actually breed from you, develop an Am Hashem that will be my family forever. And this really is the secret behind the whole bondage in Mitzrayim. Someone asked her a few weeks ago, I think it was you, who was like such a big deal about Yitzias Mitzrayim, our gratitude for Hashem taking us out of Mitzrayim. Why did he put us there in the first place? And I said that we would get to the answer in a few weeks. We're there now. It takes a God. It takes a God to be able to take a small family and breed it into an entire nation that will maintain that one value, not branch off, and turn into what he wants it to turn into. And Hashem said, I'm going to do that. Now there was a selection process. We say, even from Avraham Avinu, not everybody was going to make it. Right? We have to realize that we, at the end of the day, stood only a 25% chance of making it, because half of Avraham Avinu's seed was rejected, half of Yitzchak's seed was rejected. So it says, "Varbe zaroi voeten lois Yitzchak, beten Yitzchak es Yaakov es Esav." Hashem, since I started the process, you had Yitzchak and Yishmael. Yishmael we knocked off. Hashem is focused on Yitzchak. That's the story of the purpose of the world. It's continuing with Yitzchak. Yitzchak had Yaakov and Esav. Okay? Etan Esav is Haseya the Rosh Hashanah. Esav, okay, he's Yitzchak's seed, he's Abraham's seed, he gets his land. Seir, go, get something to hate, we'll finish with you, give me your receipt that I paid you off, you're out of the picture. And now, Yaakov, one of Yodu Mitzrayimu, Yaakov is now beginning to develop into a family. His children, there are grandchildren. The next stage is the branching stage. Right? Family of 12 is one thing. Family of 70 is already another thing. Still kind of stick together. The next generation, they start branching off. Therefore, Hashem says, now comes the time where we have to begin a controlled breeding process. And this is the story of Shibud Mitzrayim. A controlled breeding process. This was, you can put it in two terms, the incubator in which Hashem bred under controlled conditions the nation that he's going to turn into the Am Hashem. Why? This was Hashem fulfilling his commitment to Avraham Avinu. Incubator is one term. More accurate term is how do you say the a forging fire? There must be a word for it. What?
Smelting
pot? Where you actually purify metals and make things out of them. In order to, what's that? The Kura HaBarzel. That is the term that we find throughout the Navi. The Mitzrayim is referred to as the Kura HaBarzel, the blacksmith's oven. That's the place where, first of all, you purify the metals. It's hot. It's not like you can't stick your finger into your own oven. But that's nothing. These were ovens that were heated up for weeks before they could be used for things they needed to be used for. You sweat it anywhere in the area. You couldn't get too close. But these were hot ovens. They were used to purify metals. You put in iron, lead, whatever it is, it melted in there. Any impurities were just completely evaporated. Then you could start working with the metals. This is what Hashem was putting through putting the Jewish people through. But for our purposes, we're calling it an incubator, as in a breeding ground. In Canaan, Canaan was a broad land, not under central rule, all kinds of different backward, broken up kingdoms, right? And it would be very easy for a family to start scattering around, settling in different places. Hashem didn't want that. He brought them to Mitzrayim, where A, they were a distinctly foreign entity in one nation. They weren't different nations like they were in Canaan. Canaan was all kinds of different, 31 kingdoms, all kinds of different races. Canaan, Amori, Prizi, Yavusi. There was one Egyptian nation. Anybody else stood out like a sore thumb. So that's number one. The Jews will remain the Jews. And number two is, they were under one ruler. There was no going anywhere. The Mitzrayim was a locked jail, even not for slaves. The ministers couldn't leave. Nobody could leave Mitzrayim without a special permit. And this is where Hashem is going to breed the Jewish people. So now, we understand what the purpose of the bondage was. This is very, very fundamental to realize this. It wasn't circumstantial. This was Hashem's plan of fulfilling his promise to Avraham Avinu and developing his people, his family, into a nation of millions. And this was, again, this is a Hashem-devised plan. No human being could do this. How to develop them into a nation of millions and then reveal himself to them in such a way that will make such an impact that will imbue them with extreme enthusiasm. How do you do that also? You get together a nation, let's say they wouldn't have spread all around. They wouldn't have developed into a nation of 3 million in Canaan. Let's say, okay? They wouldn't have spread around. Now, first of all, Will it really work? For Yaakov teaches his family his principles. The Shvatim are teaching their children. Will it really hold well for the 3 million? It starts getting diluted soon enough. It's not what Hashem wanted. Right? Hashem wanted first to breed them, became a nation of 3 million, and then he came and made such a spectacular, introduced himself to them in such a way that the impact remained forever. So therefore, this was Hashem's plan. He brought them to the lowest depths of despair. And Hashem has time. For Hashem, a project can extend over a few lifetimes. It can encompass a few generations. Hashem wanted to do the job really well. And like we said, Yediyas HaFochim, right? It's that principle of Yediyas HaFochim. The more aware you are of the alternative, of one alternative, the more you can appreciate the other alternative. And therefore, Hashem would gather the 3 million together in Eretz Canaan, and he'd tell them, Rabboisai, Yisrael HaMaba, all kinds of good things I can offer you, here's my Torah. At best, he would have gotten a positive reply, okay, alright. He wouldn't have gotten it from all the 3 million for sure, right? And those who would, alright. Hashem wanted to create a very, very, very impressive alternative. The lowest, lowest depths. The worst suffering possible. And then from there, to suddenly hurl them up to the greatest heights. That is an experience that would make such an impression that all 3 million of them yelled at the top of their lungs, Nasa v'nishma. They were inflamed. They were going crazy. Right? After they came from the Sheba de Mitzrayim to see the 10 Makkos, and that culminates at Matan Torah, this is mamish a genius plan of Hashem. Lowest of depths, and it shot them up to the highest of places. And that was an impact that worked. Even though by today, the impact is starting to wear off a little bit. People are starting to fall off, but the impact is still carrying through. It's something only Hashem could do. Make such a momentum, he gives such a push that continues to roll 3,000 years later. That's the story of Sheba Mitzrayim. And this is what we're meant. That's why also we go all the way back to the beginning of the story. We don't start the story by saying, well, we were slaves. And Hashem, who doesn't believe in injustice, came and freed us. So now, we continue and we say, Baruch Shomer Avtochoso LeYisrael. Baruch Hu. We say, blessed is the one who was Shomer, his promise to the Jewish people. Now, simply understood, Shomer means the one who kept his promise. Thank Hashem for keeping his promise. But no, it's more than that. Baruch Shomer Havtochoso LeYisrael means, blessed is the one who watched it. Or in other words, who tended to it. Who bred it. Right? Aviv Shomer Es Hadavar means, it says that Yaakov Avinu, after he heard Yosef's dreams, it says, Aviv Shomer Es Hadavar, he was Shomer, meaning, oh, he made a note of it, and he was studying, he was waiting to see what's going to develop here. Baruch Shomer Avtochoso LeYisrael means, blessed is the one who preserved his promise. Not that he fulfilled it. That's not the point. He kept it. Of course he kept it. The Shomer as in, he cared for it. He developed it. He was on top of it. He developed his promise to Israel. Shakadosh Baruch Hu shchishev es haketz la'asos. Hashem was already planning the end result. The whole purpose of the bondage in Mitzrayim was where Hashem wanted to get us afterwards. And in order to do it right, in order for us to get the full benefit of it, he had to pull us all the way, all the way, all the way to the bottom. Just like an arrow. The further ahead you want it to go, the more you pull it back. That's what Hashem was doing when he brought us into Mitzrayim. He was pulling back, 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 back. Masha'omar la'avram avinu bibris ben absarim. And that's why he told Avram at the Bris Ben Absarim, he said, Yodaya Teida. Avram Avinu said, Bamoida ki Yiroshena. But how will I know it will be fulfilled? Now, okay, we have the pshat Rashi gives. But not everybody agrees. We have to realize that's one level of pshat. That Avram questioned whether Hashem would really do it, and Hashem punished him by telling him your children will go to Mitzrayim. But that might be one level of pshat. But the pshat here is more on a more fundamental level. Oi, sorry. Sorry. Sorry about that. on a more fundamental level, what was actually going on, for example, Ramban says that there was no chet, Avraham Avinu wasn't questioning, and Hashem wasn't punishing. Hashem was explaining to Avraham Avinu how it's going to work. You want this to be something eternal? You want your family to turn into my family? Listen how it's going to work. Your children will be slaves, in sojourners really, in a land that's not theirs. Yes, they'll suffer there for a long time. You want to know how I'm going to do it? This is how I'm going to do it. This is the only way it'll work. Then, yes, the nation that will enslave them, I will judge. And afterwards, they'll go out after with great wealth. What great wealth really means, on the deeper level, we know. We just learned the other day in the Gemara that they went out with a lot of gold and silver. But on the deeper level, it means this great wealth, the great wealth of their newly established bond with Hashem. Now, just note in parentheses, once we mention this, Sadi Goy notes, how does Hashem describe all the wonders, the ten makas, which we'll see soon, were spectacular events. And of Kriyas Yamsuf, was a year full of unbelievable wonders. It was a glorious year. How does Hashem describe that to Avraham Avinu? Two words. Don Anoichi. I'm going to judge them. Two words. Reb Sadia Gaon says like this, listen to this. Two words said by Hashem to Avram meant a full year packed with the most spectacular events ever. So, what about all the lengthy and elaborated expositions of the Nevi'im on the end of time? What's that going to look like? If Don Anoichi meant the whole story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, what do all the lengthy Nevu'is of Yeshaya and Yechezkel, what are they going to look like? Sadi Goyen makes that note. It's a good thing to note. But okay.
Is that to say that they will necessarily be the Malam and Etevin?
What's that?
Is that to say that it will necessarily also be the Malam and Etevin?
I don't know. I'm telling you his diuk, and then I always draw back on what the Rambam says, and how it'll play out, we'll know when it happens. I don't know. Okay. And now, so that's, here we've really covered, let's note, we've really covered the beginning of the story, which is a fundamental aspect of the whole story. The purpose of the bondage. And now we move on to our next stage of the discussion. Behisha Amdalav Yisainu Velanu, right? Here's the famous part of the Agada. You stand up, you make a big deal out of it, you sing it. Behisha Amdalav Yisainu Velanu. He, what's he? That's what stood in good stead for our forefathers and us. What's that? That promise that Hashem made. I am going to be guiding the development of the Jewish people, which continues until now. That is what stood us in good stead. Because it wasn't just one nation that tried to destroy us, but in every generation they tried to destroy us, but Hashem always saves us. So here, why are we getting into the general phenomenon of people always trying to destroy us when we're talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim? Or when we're talking about, we're not even holding by Yetzias Mitzrayim now, we're talking about the very beginning when Hashem told Avram, yes, your people are going to be my Am Hashem. Here we're coming to another very fundamental point in just understanding the way the world works. As soon as the Jewish people, as Avram Avinu's family, before the Jewish people, as Avraham Avinu's family was named as the Am Hashem, immediately there activated a certain law of nature. And that law of nature is called anti-Semitism. This has to be understood very well. Anti-Semitism is an inherent phenomenon built into the world. It's so built into the world, people make this mistake. Well, I see people with such short-sighted historic vision. What was the lesson of the Holocaust? No buying German cars. What's... See, also today, I'm not a fan of Arabs. Believe me, I don't like Arabs. I keep away from them. I cross the street when I see them. But you see sometimes that people's whole religion and whole ideology turns into Arab bashing. Now, I don't like Arabs. I don't mind if they die. But I have more important things on my agenda than that. I don't know. It just turns me off. Not because I'm politically correct. I have no problem. Someone wants to go kill the Arabs, fine. I think they died on me, so it's okay. The recorders died on me. But I'm going to be arrested next week. But when you see a political party, what do they offer? You know that the Arabs there don't pay tax? Well, you do. And you know that I don't even know who it is. I don't know who it is. I saw flyers in the street. This is what a political party was selling. This is what they have to offer the Jewish people. This is the agenda that you should vote for. This is what we want out of a Jewish state. That, no. If there are, you can't build illegally, Arabs won't build illegally either. If you're paying arnona, we'll see to it that the Arabs pay arnona. Ah, there we've got a worthwhile value system. This is what the Jewish people exist in this world for. This is what we come into. This is our historic role in the history of Judaism. What will be the accomplishment of the Jews of our time? That the Palestinians, Ahmad, paid arnona. And he paid it in full. He didn't get an 80% break. This is what we're going to contribute to the long chain of Jewish history. I don't mind if Ahmad pays arnona. He's too cheap for me to relate to, b'chlal, though. I don't have time to worry about whether he's paying arnona or not. I have other things on my agenda. But the truth is that it's based on this point. You have to understand that whenever you see anti-Semitism around, whenever you see nations who are opposing us, don't turn your whole focus into hating them because you're missing the point. Realize that they're just filling a slot that someone has to fill. Right? There are people saying that the Arabs are the worst things ever created. Come on, do they compete with the Germans? Do they compete with the English? Let's not forget, maybe not everybody here is as old as me, but I remember 800 years ago what the English were doing to the Jewish people. Right? Do they compete with the French? Do they compete with the Spanish? Oh, they still have a way to go before they reach those madrigals. So again, I hate the Arabs. They should go where the Germans, English, French, and Spanish should go too. But the point here is that anti-Semitism is an inherent part of the way that world runs, which will always be filled by somebody. If we fulfill the dream of dumping all the Arabs in the Mediterranean, then the Orientals will start. Believe me, we just haven't seen what the Chinese can do yet. But they'll get there too. There will always be somebody until the time comes for all of this to end. It's so inherent in the Bria that it doesn't even have to be people. Avraham Avinu didn't have children. Why? Because the material world, Olam Hazeh, opposes the Jewish people. They did, and that's why Avraham Avinu couldn't have children. Maharal says that. It's the same root of anti-Semitism. In the world and the nature of the way the world runs, there's opposition to the Am Hashem. If it's not manifested by people, it'll be manifested by the constellations. Avraham Avinu couldn't have children because of anti-Semitism. Because anti-Semitism is built into the way the world runs. Now let's understand that on a bit of a deeper level. Let's understand this on a bit of a deeper level. The Maharal says that, now again, I'm not saying this to excuse the anti-Semites. On the contrary, we don't mind getting rid of them all. We have to realize that they're fulfilling a function. And if we're not aware of the function they're fulfilling, then we're going to be missing a lot of very important points. Maharal says as follows. This world, let's note, if you want to see another example of the fact that the Bria itself opposes the Am Hashem, it starts from a deeper level. It's because the Bria itself opposes Hashem himself. By the way, I'll just note something very interesting. There are four Malchias, right? We're getting a little bit of a deeper level, but bear with me. There are four Malchias, right? We know there are four Golias. Golos, Babel, after Mitzrayim. Bavel, Yavan, Paras Amadai, Yavan, and then Edom. Those are four Malchis, meaning those are the four major kingdoms of the world. And interchangeable with that is also the four Golias, the four exiles. Now it sounds a little bit strange that the two are used interchangeably, because is the definition of the Greek Empire that they exiled the Jews? That was one of hundreds of things that they did in their rule. Right? Is that how we identify them? Is it Golus? Or Nimrod. What's Nimrod's other name? Amraphel. Why? Amar Poel. He ordered Avraham Avinu to fall into the furnace. That's his name? I mean, that's what defines the man? The man was a king with a very long career. And he's the one who told Avraham Avinu to jump into the furnace. So the answer is yes. That's really the entire function they're filling in this world. Sounds very egocentric. The Persian Empire, the great Persian Empire. Eretz Yisrael, the Jewish people, is one small nation under their immense rule. Right? Now, we would imagine that at the top, right, in the government offices, the Jews occupy a very small space in their consciousness. Now, 3 years into Ahasuerus' rule, makes a big party. Party that encompasses all of Shushan HaBira, right? Has that got anything to do with the Jews? It's got to do with the Jews. Jews are a tiny little sliver of his kingdom. Chazal tell us, oh no, it had a lot to do with the Jews. Ahasuerus had something gnawing at his mind the whole 3 years of his reign. Will the Jews get their Beis HaMikdash back? And when he reached the point when he saw, according to his calculations, that they're not, he made a grand party. Come on. That's what the king of Persia is worried about. And the answer is yes. The essence of these nations, whether they're aware of it or not, and often they are, the essence of these nations is to oppose the Am Hashem. And that's why the essence of these four great kingdoms, Babylonian, the Persian, the Greek, and the Roman Empire, was to oppose the Am Hashem. Maharal explains it like this. Why four? Hashem is one, right? When you depart from one, you go in four directions. The number four denotes departure from that central point. That's why the essence of this world, of the non-Jews of this world, but really of this world, is in the number four. It was Hashem who was one. This world conceals Hashem's appearance. That's why it manifests as four. And that's why the whole story of the world is characterized by the number four. Four major kingdoms. Four Golias. Why? This is the story of the departure from Hashem, the central point. The Jewish people, how does it work? The Jewish people are that central point. Hashem is Echad. What's the gematria of Echad? 13. Jewish people are 13 Shvatim. What is the geographic setup of the Jewish people? In the Midbar. The central point, with the four points around it, that's five. The difference between the Maharal, numbers are very, very big. The truth is, in Kabbalah, numbers are very big. The Maharal says the difference between the number four and the number five is all the difference. Four represents a world devoid of Hashem. Five represents the representatives of Hashem. The four that revolve around the central point. We don't peel the central point out of the middle. Five is a nation that radiates from Hashem. Existence that radiates from Hashem. Four is existence that departed from Hashem. The world history, by its essence, by its definition, is departure from Hashem. The Jewish people are representation of Hashem. Since the world is departure from Hashem, there is no room, just as kiveyochol, there's no room for Hashem in the physical world, there's no room for an Am Hashem in the physical world. This is how the Maharal puts it. There's no room for an Am Hashem in the physical world. And therefore, built into the way the world works is anti-Semitism. It's not something that happened to bounce from Europe to the Middle East, bounce from nation to nation. It's in the air. And before there were nations actually fulfilling the halacha, that Esav Sinai Le'Yaakov, The world itself did it. Avraham Avinu couldn't have children because of that same principle. The material world opposes an Am Hashem. Hashem created that system. That's true. For a reason, as we'll see soon. And what is the reason for all that? Because the whole purpose of the Am Hashem is manifesting Hashem, representing Hashem, in spite of all of the adversity. That's the reason for this whole setup. That's why this is set up this way. That's why Klal Yisrael has to contend with the four Malchias, the four Goliaths, because there's no room for an Am Hashem in their scheme of things. And that's why consciously or subconsciously they're always busy fighting the Jewish people's existence in unnatural ways. Hitler was a natural phenomenon. What happened at the end of the war? At the end of the war, when the Germans were losing, they were being fought on two fronts. They were fighting the Allies on one front, they were fighting the Russians on the other front. It was a desperate situation. They needed all the resources they can get. Hitler was busy pulling trains away from the front in order to speed up the deportations. It was more important to him. His generals were going nuts. But it was more important that the more he saw that he's starting to lose, the more desperately he stepped up his efforts to wipe out as many Jews as he can. So the lesson from that is that we shouldn't buy German cars? Or is the lesson from that to note, look, there's something divine going on here, coming through very, very low means. But here we're seeing what's actually a law of nature that encompasses all of history. There's no getting around it. And therefore we stress here, yes, as soon as we introduce the concept that we are the Am Hashem, we have to introduce at the same time, Am Hashem comes with, built into the role of Am Hashem, is that intense adversity. Now a little more on the function of that adversity, we'll discuss next week.